It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 536 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening. This week is the return of Marvin Wynn from The Edge. His latest Kickstarter is underway for The Edge Trade Paperback Volume 1, and it's described this way. Over 130 pages of infectious adventure taking you to the edge and beyond. Marvin and I discuss what this excellent indie comic series is all about, who the characters are, and what we can expect from him in the future. Be sure to support this excellent fundraising project before it concludes on Thursday, June 16 at 5:02 Eastern Daylight Time. Once again, I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get through in this episode, so let's get on with the show. They don't know what it is, can explain it. All they know is that it's coming for you. They don't know what it is, can contain it. All they know is that it's coming for you. It's great to welcome back to the podcast Marvin Wynn, the creator of a fascinating series called The Edge, and he has a Kickstarter going on right now for the collected edition of the first four issues. How's it going, Marvin?
It's going good, Wayne. How are you?
Good, good. Good to talk with you, as always. Why don't you tell people, in case somebody wasn't around the last time you and I talked, what is The Edge about?
Right. So, I mean, I always describe The Edge as a throwback book to those in the 90s. The book is influenced by X-Men and Wildstorm titles like Wildcats and Stormwatch. I mean, our goal was always to tell a compelling story with interesting characters and good art. Within that, stories are overarching and things mentioned in early issues have payoffs later. The character cells drive the story and their backgrounds are revealed as more of the world is explored. But the question is, what is the Edge? The Edge is an enhanced drug that gives powers that the more the power is used, the more the Edge takes us in and it affects you and can cause death. So the abilities that are granted are less a gift and more of a curse. And once the world is aware of the enhanced humans, sides will be chosen, threats will come from everywhere. And the book is all about escalation. You know how when you're fighting something and the more you fight, the more fights come for you.
Interesting. Now, how long have you been working on The Edge?
Mark and I started working on it. I always get the dates kind of mixed up. And I actually went back in some of my emails and looked at, we've been talking about working on this book since about like 2008.
Wow. That's great. Of course, you know, there's more than just these four issues that are available, but this is going to be a professionally printed version of it. The other ones, I think you self-published, right?
Correct.
Right. So we want to make sure that this now, let's just talk about that. I understanding there has been a version printed before, but this has new material. What's the new material that this book's going to have?
Right. So the original publication, which was originally available online, had the original first issue from the original run of the book. Mm-hmm. So when we started working more with stores and doing conventions more and things like that, we went back and redid issue one. So issue one was redrawn, recolored, relettered. Some of the script changed a little bit. And to me, it came out a lot better than the first issue. I mean, it gave us a lot more chance to be more dynamic with some of the paneling and some of the artwork and colors that Mark, Luis, and then James of the Letters did. So okay. It's brand new issue one. Mm-hmm. And the trade through the Kickstarter will also include a one-time cover. Mm-hmm. As well as previews of two one-shots, and then what we're calling a one-cut, because it's going to focus on the Revenant character, and he uses knives all the time.
Okay. So who is the Revenant character, by the way?
Revenant is kind of plays out as the lead character of the first four issues, but he is the primary antagonist through first four issues and other issues that are coming forward. So he's a former government assassin who decides that he no longer wants to be handled. So he escapes into the world with the secrets of the Edge, and a strike team is formed to go after him, either bring him in or to capture him. They're really not concerned with him giving up the secrets of the Edge because he's not going to tell anybody anything because he's a jerk. They're more concerned with someone capturing him and getting his blood. So the world at large is unaware that the Edge is in circulation. Mm-hmm. So they want to prevent the secret getting out. And then because then the floodgates open and then everything starts to change.
Okay. All right. So in other words, you've got a long arc in mind for the story.
Right. So I said that the first four issues is the first arc. Our next arc is five issues, and then it goes on from there. So we've planned up to, I think we're kind of working around the fourth or fifth arc right now.
Mm. Wow. That's great. It's a lot of books don't get that far.
Right.
So that's really great to see that. Now, one of the things I always enjoy about the Edge is its diversity. And you and I have talked about this before, but I always think that it deserves being discussed. How important was it for you to have diversity in this book?
I think one of the things that you want to do when you're creating a character is letting the character speak to you on who they are. Mm-hmm. And you really don't want to say we need a mix of this and a mix of that. Mm-hmm. You want it to feel natural, like the world is natural with its diversity in people, thoughts and ideas. Mm-hmm. Things need to happen off the cuff. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that we were doing when we were creating the characters is that we just said, okay, so here's the character, here's their personality. What does that say about them to be? And then you come up with their creed or their skin tone or whatever that is. Whatever works for the character is what works for him. And mm-hmm. I think we did a really good job of getting a good mix of characters from different places and different locations. And as we move forward in the book, we'll be introducing people from different parts of the world who are going to get caught up in the madness that is the Edge.
It's fascinating because it sounds to me like the whole business of diversity happened naturally for you.
Right. And I think that is what we probably should be looking for from stories, is making sure that we're not, I don't want to say forcing someone into a situation, but making sure that things blend properly and that these characters aren't just this guy standing in the background just because we need to fill a role in the character. Mm-hmm. And let the character say, this is who I am, this is what I want to be, and try to set your path that way so that then it feels like a natural real person and not just a quota per se.
Mm-hmm. Which is good. But you have a poster that I always think about that you show all the characters in the Edge universe. Mm-hmm. And it's a really diverse and fascinating thing. So many of the characters I'm interested in learning more about. I was looking at your website, theedgecomic.ecwid.com, and I noticed you've got an action figure, a mini statue, and the first four issues. Looks like one was a convention exclusive one.
Right.
And I was really interested because, like, for example, the one character is Blaine. Why don't you talk about who Blaine is? He's got an action figure.
Right. So the action figure thing is something that we've been trying to do for a while. And we had in the past worked with the Loose Collector Company, and they did a custom figure, two custom figures for us. They did a 6-inch scale and then a 3 1/4 like G.I. Joe scale. Mm-hmm. So during their involvement in doing action figures, they became a manufacturer. Mm-hmm. So I've known Dave from Loose Collector for a while, and we started talking about doing the figure. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to do the G.I. Joe scale. And what ended up happening as we were going along is that people have started moving beyond the 3-inch scale. Like there are a few independent toy manufacturers that are still doing that 3-inch G.I. Joe scale. Everyone else moved on to the 6-inch scale.
Right.
We're going to release the 3-inch one, and then we're going to go ahead and go and later do the 6-inch one. And Blaine always seems to be the first character that gets in these situations and these figures because he's kind of I don't want to say he's not my one and only favorite, but he's just such a interesting character to me. That he's a guy who grew up in here in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and he has this very weird background. Hmm. We're going to cover a little bit of that in one of the one shots that I was sharing. It's a one shot called Rush. Mm-hmm. So he comes back to Pittsburgh because someone has discovered a vial, an untainted vial of the Edge, hmm. and they're putting it up for auction. Hmm. So all these elements are going to descend on Pittsburgh. Like, you're going to have government assassins, government agents, the criminal underworld, a lot of different personalities are going to descend on the city. And they're all going to try to get their hands on this vial of the Edge. And Blaine is probably pretty much going to be in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. He's going to be the only one that doesn't want it. Doesn't want it out in the open. He pretty much wants to take it and burn it. Mm-hmm. So we're going to explore a little bit of his background, where he comes from in that story. Mm-hmm. But he always comes off as that interesting character, because in his first appearance in issue one, we originally had him with like longer hair. Mm-hmm. And the one design thing that I really didn't like. I didn't like the longer, shorter length hair. So the first issue, we just burn his hair off. And then he comes back in the second issue with the anime point. So he's got the pointy anime hair now. And his hair never moves. And we're actually going to explain what he does to his hair so it doesn't move around. When he's in battle or when he's doing anything, his hair just stays perfect all the time. So it's one of those things, like, if we're going to give someone anime hair, we have to have an anime explanation on why his hair is like this.
It's a superpower.
Yes. It's part of his power set.
I know a lot of superheroes that are like that.
Yeah.
So that's good. That's good. And Blaine, is that actually his real name?
His real name is Anthony Antonelli is his real name.
Where'd the Blaine come from?
Because he's a pain in people's sides. That's what a Blaine is. Something that's a pain in someone's side. So he's a Blaine in people's sides, and he got that name when he was younger.
Okay. All right. So that's pretty interesting. Now, the other figure that's on the page, Mystic. Mm-hmm. He's one of the diverse characters. So talk about who he is.
So again, when I like talking about these characters is that they all have these very interesting backgrounds. And mm-hmm. the one thing that we do in the book is that I don't want to tell their origin until it's important to the story. Mm-hmm. So in issue two, we go a little bit backwards with the Bolt character and give a little bit of his background, mm-hmm. and how his power is activated. And then it leads right into the modern part of the story. Mm-hmm. So Mystic is our sword wielder. And in the beginning of the story, he wears armor. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we're going to explain later is that he's not the only one that held these swords. Mm. These swords have a lot of legacy, a lot of history. Mm-hmm. And the other people who wield the swords still have some kind of influence over the swords. Mm. So they're kind of it's something that progresses on. And they're somewhere in the background, like not guiding him or telling him what to do, but influencing him a little bit. Mm-hmm. It starts to affect the way he acts, the way he dresses, because mm-hmm. they're trying to push him into doing things to further their goals. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't get to accomplish the things before they before they died, either by natural causes or in battle. Mm-hmm. So we're going to explore that in a later story. We have it. It's just called Mystic right now, where we're going to go back and we're going to show the history of the swords and where they originally came from. So okay. This character you can't really, without getting into that, I can't really say much about him, but this is the guy that has scars between both his eyes, and they came from the swords. When he originally picked the swords up, the swords kind of, I want to say, scanned his DNA, and it like left marks there, like barcodes almost. So the swords marked him. And he kind of marked the sword. So he's the only one as long as he's still alive, he's mm-hmm. the only one that can wield these swords and do the things that the swords would mm-hmm. do.
So why does he get the name Mystic?
I mean, this one came, it doesn't have like any history. I just liked it. Okay. when the first character was first drawn and I'm looking at it, I'm like, this guy he's Mystic. This is just Mystic. Mm-hmm. And it's that. Just a name. I mean, I couldn't come up with it. I can't come up like with Blaine. I have like a reason why he's named as Mystic. I have no reason. I just like it.
It's mystical.
Yeah, it just fits. Right.
That's a lot of fun for that. And you have a wide variety of characters. That's the thing I love about it. How many characters do you think that you've created for The Edge?
So when I was originally started working on the story, I probably had about 300 to 400 characters.
Wow.
Most of those characters weren't very useful. They got trimmed. Some of them got trimmed off. Some of them got merged together. Mm-hmm. Some of them were new creations. So I think that our current count was like a little over 70 characters.
Wow.
And we've currently been in working on issue 18. Mm-hmm. So between issue 1 and issue 18, all the characters, when you mentioned the bio page, we'll make an appearance. And we actually added a few new characters along the way. So Mark is going to be doing a new bio. Mm-hmm. And he really loves drawing all those characters like that on one page. So one day, if we ever get him to come onto a one of these streams and talk, he said that he didn't like it. He's lying. He loves it.
Well, that's cool. It's good to have like an artist who really enjoys the subject matter, because then, you know, when you consider all the time they have to spend drawing, when you're writing, all you have to say is somebody threw a punch, Mystic throws a punch. And how long does it take for him to draw that? Probably a while.
Yep. I was saying that, and one of the things that we're going to be doing later this year, and we're actually going to still do some filming of it at the Three Rivers Comic Con here in Pittsburgh in June 4th and 5th, is we're working on a script to store like a series. Mm. We're going to talk about the creation of a single comic from beginning to end and then dropping it at the store.
Wow.
And I think that a lot of people don't know the process.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that a lot of people don't talk about, and they don't show it. Mm-hmm. So we're going to show the whole entire process of how I write the script. It goes to Mark for art. Art comes back. I have to go back to the script again, mm-hmm. make sure that the word balloons and things will fit on the page. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I have to trim dialogue. Sometimes a dialogue is eliminated completely because it's not going to fit.
Mm-hmm.
Once that's done, it goes to Luis or one of our other colors to do the colors. Those come back to me. We do like another check on making sure that things are flowing properly. And then it goes off to James to do the letter.
Wow. But how long does that process take?
That can be 6 months to a year on a single issue.
Wow. See, people kind of think, and I run into this frequently, people think it just sort of pops magically out.
Right.
You know, you just sit there in an hour, you have a full comic book to sell. And I'm always like, I don't think you know what you're talking about, sadly.
I mean, it's a process. It's like creating like a video game, a movie, TV series. Mm-hmm. These things are, it seems like that it just come, you're talking about it, then all of a sudden here, it's available for you to watch, or it's available for you, it's available for you to play. Mm-hmm. And it's a process.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a long time to get those things done. And you're thinking that, we're up to 18 issues, so that's 6 months to a year, and we haven't been doing this for 18 years yet. So you know, we're a little bit ahead of the curve on sometimes getting things done in 3 months, because we're able to, like, there isn't a lot that I have to do once the pages come back to me. I generally don't have to make changes because Mark does such a good job of being able to make sure things work and fit. I consider him like a second cameraman. Like he'll see things I don't see sometimes. Hmm. So he adapts to what he thinks will work better. And there isn't, I mean, like besides the Blaine hair thing, I don't think I've ever questioned anything he's done.
Hmm. That's so interesting because, you know, I've often talked with creators, and when the artist provides the art, it sparks something in the writer.
Mm-hmm.
Because something about the way he's done it, the way he's portrayed something, makes the imagination of the writer engage.
Right.
And something, you go a different direction you never thought you'd go in the beginning.
Right.
I love that.
And that's true for the Mystic character, because when we consider like our second level, when we do a little variations on the costumes and we change Mystic's costume, and we were talking and he brought up, so we've changed this costume. What does that mean for the character? And it just lit a fire. And I said, let's just go the whole way with this and do this whole entire, now it's a fantasy story with these swords and their meaning to not only to him, but these other people who held these swords. And it was something that it was sitting right there. And I didn't even think about doing anything like that until he started asking about the costume.
Right. Right. See, that is such a, I feel badly for like writers who, and like Star Trek does this. The script is ironclad. The actors have to speak exactly what is on the script. There's no influencing it or shaping it in any way. And I always think that they lose something when that happens. I know they want Star Trek to be a certain thing, but if you can get the creative process in it, I think these kinds of wonderful little additions happen and they make the story better, in my opinion. And I feel badly for Star Trek and stuff that that rigidity is in there, because I can hear that you've encountered that, and it makes something that you might never have thought of happen. And I think that's so great. And again, that's that magic together of writer artist. That just it's a magical process, I think, that people don't quite understand if you haven't experienced it.
Right, and I think that it helps when you've been working with the same art team for years, and they get, I get them, they get me. And like I said, that I can hand the script to Mark, and he turns it into magic. Mm-hmm. When I hand it to Luis to do the colors, it comes back, and he's done his magic. Like I'll say, hey, can we do XXXXX? He turns it back in, and I don't ever have to go back to him and say, hey, can you fix something like this, or can you change this? And it doesn't happen because they understand the world, and they understand the characters so well that the art team just makes my crazy words just explode into something I never thought it would be.
That is, to me, that's the magic of comic books to me. I think that the wonderful thing is a writer can write these fantastic scripts, but an artist can tell it in such a way that even the writer is surprised by some of the wonderful things that happen in the comic. And I wish more people understood that process, because a lot of people don't get it. Right. And they just think that it's somehow you write the words, the artist actually makes it happen exactly the way you wrote it. Mm-hmm. And they lose some of that magic when they try and do that kind of thing.
That's why we want to do this series where we will go over this. And the one thing that I hope it happens is that we open it up to other people and say that, all right, now we're going to talk to this creative team and say, get their ideas on how the creative process works for them. And then we'll take it out of the comic realm into music. We'll take it out of the music realm and we'll go to video games. We'll take it out of that realm and we'll go and do action figures. And just like the creative process is so variant and different for those things. How does a writer come up with a song? Like my cousin is a singer. And she actually does the soundtrack for The Edge. So we're going to do a soundtrack, and the first song is in our Kickstarter video. So I mean, it's so much different thing. Like even a baker, like my cousin's a baker, so like even her, it's creative, it's creation. You're creating something that didn't exist, and it's a process that like people don't understand. They think that things just appear out of nowhere. And like once you open their eyes to it, and then they can say, oh, I want to try that now. Like people have came up to me at conventions and said that, man, I read your book and it inspired me to want to be a writer. Guy came up and he said that, man, I've been wanting to put my things on the page for 30 years, and reading your book helped inspire me to finally go ahead and do it, because I see that anyone can give this a try and just see how that happens.
Right. Right. It's just I use that word magic. I just think that it's one thing to write a novel. You have to use words a specific way, but when you have a visual medium like comics, the visual things that you can put on a page are just always going to appeal to people.
Yes.
And I really love that, because that's your book really stands out too. I think you can tell that the two of you work together. you know, in certain books, when you start to read stuff, that you have a, you know where you're going, and the artist knows where what they're going to do, and things just work all together. It's not, I always compare it to like driving in a car. I mean, I don't get in the car and just drive somewhere and drive around the neighborhood and stuff like that. I always get in the car when I want to go somewhere. And to me, a comic is, there has to be a purpose. There's somewhere we're going. And your book does that quite well. I really think it's terrific.
Thank you. I mean, but that's the one thing that I've always liked. And when you brought up Star Trek and you're saying how it was rigid, I see that with Next Generation. Mm-hmm. And I think that the way that they told stories in Deep Space Nine was different. It was the long form storytelling where an event that happened had consequences later on. Mm-hmm. Star Trek was more of a one and done, or they would have like a two or three episode arc where it's a whole story throughout. But the things that happened in the first season of Deep Space Nine had consequences in the last season of Deep Space Nine, especially with Dukat. So, and that was a character that progressed throughout the series, and you see that growth in that character. He's probably my favorite villain in all of Star Trek was Dukat, because he just went from this guy who ran the station and got run off, and he wants to have a relationship with the characters on the show. And they don't want anything to do with him because, like, dude, what do you mean you want to be our friend? No, go away. And then they let him into their world, and it just turns into the biggest mistake they ever made. He takes over the whole station again because they were friendly with him for so long, and then he goes crazy, and then he turns himself into a Bajoran, and it's like, dude, you what? Oh man, this is so good.
Well, I love Deep Space Nine; it's my favorite Trek. As I've sat and watched it, and I have friends of mine, and we sit and talk about it all the time. It's there's a depth to it. Now, they called it Deep Space Nine, and we didn't. The deep part always appeals to us because there's so many things. Different characters go different ways, and it's such a wonderful thing. That's the thing about that. I think right now, because Next Generation doesn't really hold up over the years. I mean, it was there. It was great for its time. I mean, it represented everything that was going on in the time when it first came out. But Deep Space Nine was actually a little ahead of its time. And boy, I tell you, I still sit down and watch it, and I go, "Wow, I can't believe they did that."
I think one of my favorite arcs was the arc with Nog when he lost his leg.
Yeah.
And you have this character who built up over the years where he was pretty much just Quark's nephew, and no one trusted him because he was Quark's nephew.
Right.
And he wanted to go to the academy, and Sisko thought he was joking around. He thought, well, you're a Ferengi. Why do you want to go to the academy? You're all about gaining money. And he had to prove himself, and he proved himself.
Right.
He went to the academy, and then he lost his leg, and then it turned into this depression for him where he's hiding on the holodeck. Working for a holographic character. And the holographic character is like, man, you get out of here. Go back to the real world and face your demons. And it was such a testament to the writers for that show to be able to do that thing with every character on the show. Even if they were bit characters, they all had arcs.
Yep. And in my estimation, there's no such thing as a minor character on Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
Everybody was thought out. I mean, the Ferengi that worked in the bars, they actually showed up in the very last episode. They hearkened back to the very first episode, and they were still in the last episode, those same characters. And I if you pay attention to Deep Space Nine, you just don't sit there and you can't do something else while you're watching Deep Space Nine. There's other shows you can. I can't do that with Deep Space Nine. I must devote my attention to it. And if you do that, you come away with so many things. And I think The Edge has a lot of that in it too. There's a lot of tremendous detail that if you pay attention to it, you will get more out of the story. So I think that's a great thing about that.
Right. And then that's what I'm saying is that's in shows like Deep Space Nine and comics like X-Men and Wildcats, I think they had all that. And now that's my favorite way to tell a story is like we're building up to something. And And it was, and it's why, and it's one of the best things ever going on is the MCU. The mm-hmm. MCU did that, and they're doing it again. It's like we're mm-hmm. building up to getting to these stones, and this guy's going to snap his fingers and he's mm-hmm. going to wipe out half the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sitting in the theater and it happened, and all you hear is people sobbing.
Mm-hmm.
And both my mother and my aunt turned to me and they went, "Is that it? That's the end of the movie? He won? You're not, no, we don't do that in movies. The bad guy doesn't win." And this is what the edge is, that the good guys don't always win.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that we interject is that we've got all these gray areas where people are going to do things that you might not feel are above board,
mm-hmm.
but it's about survival. And if I'm in a situation and I have to do something nefarious to save my life or to save others' lives, I have to make that choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be those choices in those situations where it's like, all right, so if I do X, this may cause people to hate me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to save all these lives, so I guess I got to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that is the thing. We always used to say that Deep Space Nine subtitles have been consequences.
Yes.
Because everything they did had consequences. Mm-hmm. Even the hologram, the holographic singer, mm-hmm. he had consequences, which I loved. So that was the thing about that show that just, and it was different for its time. It was way ahead of its time. I mean, I don't want to spend too long on it, but when they looked at, when they had people, shapeshifters who could blend in,
mm-hmm.
you know, suddenly we had September 11th, and people who could come into the country and blend in mm-hmm. were attacking us from within, and that was what was going on with the Deep Space Nine, too. So it was it was precognitive about that stuff.
So, I mean, I recommend anyone who likes any kind of long form storytelling and that kind of drama. I mean, it doesn't even have to be because you like sci-fi. You mm-hmm. watch from episode one to the last episode, watch the whole every season, and you'll just sit there in awe of the people who wrote the show. And then it had those things that you were talking about before. They were able to have freedom with their characters.
Mm-hmm. Great. And the thing about it, too, is people will say to me, "Well, which episode should I watch?" I said, "Well, you start number one and you go all the way to the end." You know, that's
skipping around and picking favorites, because all your favorites. It's such a good show. So good.
It's terrific. I would also add 24 to that. If you ever watched 24, 24 was a great show. Mm-hmm. It's one of those shows you have to pay attention. I loved it when I have to pay attention. Right. Well, your book is like that to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to pay attention. When some comics I can read through and I don't have to necessarily read all the word balloons and stuff. So they'll show me what that's all about later.
And it's just, and it's the visuals too. Like we're visually showing you something on a mm-hmm. page mm-hmm. and we're having the characters react, and we having mm-hmm. them react that way in a reason. Like in the first issue, when Interim was facing off with the God's Thunder terrorist, and she mm-hmm. rips the guy's shirt off, and he has the symbol mm-hmm. on his chest. It's the same symbol that's on Mystic Sword. Mm-hmm. And he just stands there like, so what's going on now? Because what's going on? Why do you have this symbol on it? And then it escalates so far that she doesn't get a chance to address it at that time. And she's not going to get a chance to address it until later issues, because mm-hmm. things are happening so rapidly, and she doesn't get a moment to go, hey, this guy had that symbol on his chest. What's going on? What do you know about this symbol?
Mm-hmm. See, that's the kind of thing I like. I like reading that draws me in, makes me pay attention. That's the mm-hmm. thing I really like. Now, one thing we need to make sure is that this Kickstarter is going to conclude by June 15, but I would not wait until June 15. I would be sure to get in there as soon as you can and back this project so that we get the first trade, the first collection like that, and then we can move forward into other parts and other arcs of the stories.
We'll have some interesting rewards. We actually worked with Comics on Coffee out of Florida, mm-hmm. and we will have a bag of the Edge coffee available. We will have issues 1 through 4 available, and one of the special ones is going to be a connecting cover. It covers all 4 issues.
Hmm.
There will be a rainbow prismatic cover for issue 1, Mm-hmm. And we'll make available a silver foil cover for issue one. Mm-hmm. We're also going to make available as an add-on the Netho Diaz, the original cover that he did for us. We're going to make that available again.
Wow. I've got to ask, and I don't drink coffee, but I'm just curious. I go to comic stores and I look at different Kickstarter stuff, and they're offering coffee, and I'm kind of like, why are they doing that? Is it because you drink coffee while you're reading the book? Is that what's going on?
I don't drink coffee. I just when I saw that they were a kind of like a coffee and comics kind of thing, and I mm-hmm. noticed that there's a lot of coffee comic shops popping up now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot. There's ones that are popping up. They have food. They have comics. They mm-hmm. have cereal. They have comics. Mm-hmm. And then the coffee and comics thing. It just flew up to me and said that. Try it. I mean, what's it going to hurt? Like, it's mm-hmm. it's not that expensive to do these things,
mm-hmm.
and it brings something different to the table. As you're navigating these world of comics, you want to try to add at least one thing that's so unique that you'll get people to go, man, I didn't know I wanted the Edge coffee, but now that it exists, I want it.
Mm-hmm. Because little add-ons like that just kind of help, and they help keep the movement alive, the book alive, and stuff right. like that. People don't realize it.
We can take that to like local coffee shops in the city and say, hey, would you be interested in carrying our The Edge coffee? Man, it's going to take you all the way to the edge when you drink it.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I like that one. There's another one too. I don't know if you guys are going to do, but there are some comic people get involved with beer manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
I've known a couple of them where they actually look. There's a brewery nearby where they create the comic, and they go to them and they say, "Hey, how would you like to?" There's one book I know. They actually sold like urns or something that had the beer in it that was inspired by the book. Of course, I don't drink beer, so I don't know anything about it. But I said, "Well, hey, you know, hey, it makes money and helps supports the book. All for it."
So I approached, and we may do something later, like a local company that's hot sauce.
Mm.
So we may do like an Edge hot sauce.
Mm.
So I mean, you brought up the cereal thing before. Well, maybe we'll do a Edge cereal. Mm. So I mean, it's just try different things, because all this is about is cross promotioning.
Right.
So you want to say, hey, coffee drinker, we've got this coffee about this comic. If you scan mm-hmm. this QR code, you'll get a preview of this comic. Mm-hmm. Come buy our comic. So, I mean, and then you have hot sauce people. Hey, hot sauce people, you like hot sauce, right? Do you like mm-hmm. the Edge hot sauce? Here's scan this code. Here's some books. So, I mean, it's you're trying to get those different, like, and that's why we want to do like tabletop gaming, because we want to crash into that market, because there are people who play tabletop games that don't read comics. People who mm-hmm. buy comics don't play tabletop. So combine those two things together, it's just another market to open up.
The only thing I would caution people is, I know there's one book that I really love, and they got off into gaming. They decided to turn the comic into a game,
mm-hmm.
and they have the comic has got they put on the brakes, and they're so busy with the game that they're not making comics. And I'm always like, when's the next comic coming out? Well, we're busy with the game.
Well, the good thing about that is that I'll hand that off to someone else to do. So I'll help create the world. Mm-hmm. I'll give all the data to the creator of the game, who's doing the game, and then I'll say, "You got that? I'm over here doing this."
That's right. Well, that's the important thing. See, these guys, I think they got sidetracked, and unfortunately, much as I love the book. I mean, I could say the name of the book, but I don't want to get people mad. But I'm always interested in. You know, like T-shirts, mm-hmm. hats, anything that supports the comic and the comic industry, I am all for. When I was a kid, I used to look forever for a Batman shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And now I got about 50 of them.
Yeah. But the thing is that when you went to see the first Batman movie, the first thing you did was go to the local store and say, show me your Batman shirt. and that's a buildup, and that's the mm-hmm. that's the next thing we want to try to do is try to get comics into the movie theater.
Yeah,
like put them behind the counter, put them out in front of the counter. Someone coming out of those theaters after seeing these billion-dollar epic movies, mm-hmm. you're going to want to buy merchandise. Mm-hmm. So you got comics sitting right there. Hey, what's this comic that I've never heard of before? Let me pick this up and check this out. Oh, well, now all of a sudden you've created a fan out of nowhere because this person probably never picked up a comic in their life. They just like the movies.
See, I don't understand why more comic shops and theaters don't have relationships like that. Mm-hmm. Because if you go to see the Marvel movies and you walk out the door and somebody is, you know, that comes from a comic and it's obvious. Mm-hmm. But if you walk out and they're selling a different comic, you might say, hey, that kind of interests me. But it's so people don't do that. And I just can't figure it out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, some stores do it, but I mean, it should be something. If that movie's playing in that theater, I don't care how big or small it is, there should be something there to mark that down on what's going on with that. So you're giving away, you're selling the comic and you're also handing them like a coupon and saying, hey, if you come to the comic shop, you can mm-hmm. use this coupon to take 10% off mm-hmm. books or whatever, like something like that.
See, I wish we saw more of that. See, another thing that drives me crazy is I don't understand why if you're DC and you've got the CW running DC shows, why you don't run commercials for mm-hmm. your comics during those shows?
Mm-hmm. I mean,
they're based on comics.
Yeah, you think back, you I've only seen commercials for two comic books in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. G.I. Joe, mm-hmm. because it would proceed or be around the cartoon. They would say, oh, the new G.I. Joe comics, continue the adventure. And mm-hmm. the old Levi's commercial with Rob Liefeld. Mm-hmm. They show Youngblood in that commercial, I believe. But mm-hmm. I mean, it's really, I mean, it's expensive to do those kind of things. But you're Disney and you're Warner Discovery. You have that money, so mm-hmm. there's no reason not to put this stuff in front of people, especially when they're watching these things and it's right in front of their face. Mm-hmm. Pop it up there real quick and say, let's get it on.
Well, they should have little, like, I think what they do now is they show little advertisements in the bottom left or bottom right corner. Put something in like when you watch, we've been watching Moon Knight on Disney mm-hmm. Plus. There's absolutely no recognition that this is a comic.
Yeah. Oh, they have those QR codes that keep popping up.
Oh, do they? I haven't seen them.
Yeah.
I haven't noticed
them. I think it was in one of the museums. There's a QR code and you scan it you get a Moon Knight. I think it's the first appearance of Moon Knight comic. That's it. Like, I think it's every episode has a QR code somewhere.
Oh.
It takes you to the comic store. You can download the comic.
That's smart. I agree with that. There should be a lot more of that. Every time there's a comic-related show on anything, there should be a little QR code or there should be a little advertisement like the show, buy the comic.
Yeah. I mean, even the action figure should have that somewhere on it where yep. it's taking you back to the source. And I think that's the one thing. And I think that that's what one of the creators of American Chavez was upset about is that mm-hmm. There's no residuals mm-hmm. coming back to the creators. Like, these movies make billions of dollars. The actors mm-hmm. are making millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. The guy that created it it didn't even come close to getting that. And they should be getting something back for mm-hmm. the thing that they created. mm-hmm. I mean, and I think that all this stuff is going to come to a head eventually where these creators are going to have, they're going to put it in their contracts to mm-hmm. say that if this character is made into a toy, if they're in an animated series, they're in a TV show or a movie, I get something for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it should be like if they sell an action figure, put a mini comic in with mm-hmm. it. So that when you open it up, you get to read the little book and it draws you in. If you like it, then you'll go seeking out the real thing. So anyway, I wish the people from Discovery, Warner now, whatever it is.
Yeah, and then Disney, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's the thing about it is that we have relationships with these stores. Mm. So we go to these stores and we take our ideas to them, and we're going to then seriously push them in the series about Script Store. It's going to be that store part is going to be the very important part of the end of that process. Mm-hmm. We're going to be filming in the store. We're going to film at conventions, and mm-hmm. we're going to talk to these guys and say, hey, why are you not doing this? Mm-hmm. And then we're going to go to the movie theater and ask them, like, I want to talk to the guy who runs this theater. Mm-hmm. Why are you not? This, like, most of these comic shops are right near a movie theater.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. Like the one that we usually go to, New Dimension Comics, is about 5 minutes away from an AMC theater.
Yeah.
Why are we not working together to because it helps both. It helps both. There's not anything to be lost in that situation.
Right. And even if, and let me tell you, like when the Batman was coming, the DC Comics on the cover of every DC comic around the release of the Batman was advertising that movie on the front. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, we need more of that.
Yeah. And it needs to flow both ways. Mm-hmm.
Just great stuff. So it'd be good stuff. So again, it's The Edge, and it's on Kickstarter right now. It's going to conclude on June 15. Don't wait until then, though, to get in and support it. Because Marvin here has got good stories, and we want to make sure we get to read them all. And just be sure to do that. Now, you have, as I mentioned, your website. Are there other places on social media we can find out more about your work?
Sure. So if you go to theedgecomic.com, that is currently pointing to the Kickstarter. So if you go to that link, it'll take you right to the Kickstarter. Once the Kickstarter is over with, the webpage will be back up again and in its new format. I've been building for like 5 years and never seemed to be able to finish it because there's something new that I always want to add to it. So on Facebook and Instagram, I am The Edge Comic. On Instagram, because someone has The Edge Comic and they've never posted, it's Marvin Nguyen on Twitter.
Okay. That's funny because I have my email is waynescomics@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And I noticed there's a store in Texas that's called Wayne's Comics. And they have the website Wayne's Comics. But they don't have the email because I got that at Gmail before they did it. I don't know if they did it or not, but I got a kick when I saw the website. And I went, oh, man, somebody's already got a website doing this. They got a store even.
Right.
So, but unfortunately, I couldn't use that, which I really wanted, but I wasn't willing to pay a lot of money to get it. And Marvin, any other things that are going on that we should be aware of?
Like I said, is that we're doing this script to store. Currently, we're working with a streaming service called Heroes Live TV. Mm. They actually right now carry the digital copies of The Edge. Mm. And they are shifting more to an independent digital platform. So where I think people lost a lot when Comixology changed. Mm-hmm. So they want to try to step into that spot where Comixology is kind of leaving the independence behind. Mm-hmm. So we're working with them on that. We're working with Loose Collector on the action figure. Mm-hmm. We're working with another gentleman to do to get the tabletop game. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we're throwing all the irons in the fire. Mm-hmm. And hopefully later this year, we're going to do what we're calling the Indie Summit. Mm-hmm. Where we're going to be talking with indie creators. We're going to be talking to the stores about where the market's going and try to see how we can help to reinforce the people that it's not just Marvel and DC to do comics. There's other things out here. And for people who have lost interest in having to deal with 60, 70 years worth of history of a character, they want to jump on something new because indie's doing it all. We're doing horror. We're doing supernatural. We're doing superheroes. We're doing sci-fi. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we just want to shine a light on these things and make sure that how can we not only capture the audience that is buying Marvel and DC now, but also bring in that younger generation that isn't kind of reading comics. Mm-hmm. And if you're not capturing them to read comics, you want to lose out on some creators also later on in life because they weren't enlightened to comics when they were already in their age.
Right. Right. Well, boy, I applaud what you're doing because I think it's all great stuff that needs to be done. And I hope that you continue to have a lot of success. And man, I can't wait for this Kickstarter to be a huge success and then move on because we need to see your whole story. So keep up the wonderful work, Marvin.
Thank you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.